Now, everything old is new again. America's entertainment pop culture talk show with Douglas Viviani and David Cohen.
America must face up to arithmetic and particularly fraction. Lovely day we're having.
Just a minute, ma'am. This canned corn is 3 for $29. You've only got 2 cans here. Do you want to go back and get the other one?
I only want the 2.
I know, but it's 3 for $29.
Is that so? I know it says on one can, 3 strike $29.
That's right.
What that means?
3 for $29.
Uh-huh. But you, I don't want
you don't
three,
need.
You see.
I see, but that
so
doesn't help me any.
So to buy 3 would be almost a lifetime.
I know, but if you buy 2, you see, it comes out to 9 2/3 cents a can, and we don't have fractions on the machine.
Welcome to Everything Old is New Again. If you're a keen listener of the radio, you will know that that's a short skit from the award-winning Bob and Ray, who have now retired, of course, and one has passed away. But we are going to discuss Bob and Ray with an author, David Pollack. I'd like to, my co-host, the ever-urbane David Cohen, to introduce David.
Yeah, we're really excited, Doug. We have, as you mentioned, Emmy Award winner David Pollack, who's written for The Steve Allen Show, Don Rickles, The Carol Burnett Show, All in the Family, Mary Tyler Moore, MASH, Cheers, Frasier, I think every sitcom, basically. He's written for. David recently wrote his first novel, Bob and Ray, Keener Than Most Persons. And welcome to the show, David.
Thank you, Dave. A pleasure. It's actually not a novel. It's factual. It's a biography.
That's actually what I was going to, the first thing I was going to point out, and I'm glad you did. I speaking of your history and your experiences, David, I'd like to spend a few minutes just to talk about what you have done, because you have won an Emmy for Frasier, and you've written for many, many TV shows that we have talked about on this show. We've done a number of shows ourselves on older sitcoms. I'm just wondering, are there any particular episodes that may have any meaning for you that you have written, or any something that stands out?
Well, I know that on the Mary Tyler Moore Show, it was fun because it was a hit show and everybody was talking about it. So It was just a very pleasurable experience. The characters were very identifiable, easy to hear their voices in your ear, and to write, you know, that show. It was a nice list of shows you read, but you know, all the flops I left off the list. Pretty easy to pick out ones that and MASH too. It was always fun. It was a pleasure to work on that show, and those characters too were sort of easy to glom onto and write the scripts. Wrote with my writing partner Elias Davis, and that too, of course, was a big hit. But that always makes it nicer. The nice thing, MASH was filmed not in front of an audience, but Mary Tyler Moore and some of the other shows, Steve Allen, and those shows, it was always great because you would hear the audience laughing at what you wrote.
Right.
You know, the very night they shot the show.
Did the fact that it was a live show versus a tape show in any way impact how you wrote?
Well, none of those shows that we've been talking about so far were actually live. But yes, the format of the show would definitely, if the show was live, I was on the Joey Bishop show, the late night Joey Bishop show, that was live. And, you had to make sure that the, you know, scenery changes could be made and, production, you know, the production aspect had to be a little simpler, because you couldn't stop. You just had to keep going.
Now, with these sitcoms, did any of the actors have any input, or are the writers, it's like kind of segregated into their own world and then just pass the script along?
Yeah, the latter is pretty much, exactly what happened. the writers, we're all in our individual offices or meeting, in our case, if since you're using the MASH example, Bert Metcalf was the executive producer when I was on the show, and we would often congregate in his office and just have to come up with story ideas and try to do something original that hadn't been done. It was particularly hard in my years because I was there during the 9th, 10th, and 11th years the show was on the air, so they had done just about everything.
Now, you know, with that, with your style of writing, from what I have seen, certainly you do punchlines, but I think I would argue or present to you that you might be more of a situational type of writer, or do you? Is there a difference between writing, you know, situational kind of comedy versus just set up and punchlines?
Well,
if that makes any sense.
No, it's a good question. Each show sort of has its own format. You have to start with a good story, and then you have to serve the characters in that story, and you know all the characteristics of those characters, and you try to figure out like on MASH, you know, using Alan Alda's Hawkeye character, you know, what's the worst thing that could happen given the kind of character he is? You know, how can you put him in the most pressure? And then if the story is about somebody else, you would do that. But you do have to have a, once you have that story, you just have to keep it moving. And yes, you do have to have jokes. It's never just punchline. It's never just set up punchline. The best jokes come out of the situation and out of the character and his attitude.
David, is there an episode maybe or one or two that you remember that meant a lot to you, that you were more proud of than others?
I guess a show that we won a Humanitas Award for on MASH, having to do with Hawkeye writing, sent up to the front lines where he's under a lot of pressure. There's an attack going on, and everybody is sort of literally in foxholes. He starts writing his will, and as he comes to each character, to Father Mulcahy, to BJ, to whoever, we dissolve visually with his voiceover narration as to what he's willing to them. And we, if it usually related to something in the past, which is then dramatized.
Right.
Each show there were, you know, the Steve Allen show, we used to, you know, laugh our heads off. Just the things Steve did, having nothing to do with things that we wrote, just things that he had lived, on the just out of whatever he happened to be going on at the moment.
That's great. We're going to be right back in 2 seconds, continuing with David Pollack.
When you're looking for a job, changing your career, or applying for a promotion, your resume is the first thing seen that represents you to a potential employer. Make sure your resume makes a clear, concise, and professional impression of who you are so you can get that job. Send your current resume to resumedoctorinc@aol.com for a free online review. You'll receive a reasonable quote to properly prepare your resume. Let us make sure you have a resume that will get you noticed. Send your resume or questions to resumedoctorinc@aol.com. That's resumedoctorinc@aol.com.
Anyone can create a podcast on the web. In fact, there are millions of them online. But if you want quality internet talk radio, just remember this address, TalkZone.com. TalkZone is internet talk radio for planet Earth with talented hosts, great guests, and good conversation. Ready to share your thoughts and ideas with a global audience? Become a TalkZone show host yourself. Learn more at TalkZone.com. Internet talk radio for planet Earth.
TalkZone.com.
I'm Steve Sitkowski, a former Wall Street insider. I'm holding a book that will show you investing strategies which could help you earn the kind of money you've always dreamed about. And right now, I'm giving this book away for free. So who needs to read it? If you're in the middle of your career and worry you'll never have enough money to retire, you need to read this book. If you're already retired and your income isn't enough, you need to read this book. And if you don't want to be selling burgers at 80, you need to read this free book. It includes the strategy I use to make a 72% profit on a trade where the stock only moved 12%. You'll need at least $1 million to ever fully retire. If you're behind on that goal, you really need to read Trade Like the Pros. And you can for free by calling 1-800-947-1516. Skeptical that it will deliver results? It's a free book, so what do you have to lose? Find out how at 1-800-947-1516. 1-800-947-1516.
You're listening to Everything Old is New Again, America's entertainment pop culture talk show with Douglas Viviani and David Cohen.
Have you noticed that lady there in the fifth row in the audience?
Holding the ventriloquist dummy on her lap?
Yeah,
she looks interesting. Ma'am, are you a professional entertainer lady?
No, I'm not. Because of this dummy I'm holding you in?
Yeah.
No, I was married to a ventriloquist.
Oh.
But I got custody of the dummy, see, when we separated. My husband took the house and the car and a few things like that.
Right. Why'd you ever agree to a settlement like that? Those conditions are kind of unusual. If you're not the one in the family with the ventriloquist, what good is the dummy?
Well, my husband was really quite good at his trade. He convinced me that this was our little boy.
Oh.
Of course, I realize now that this baloney about a mother's love outweighing other considerations can get a person into a fine kettle of fish, I'm telling you.
Welcome back. That's the rather subtle cerebral humor of Bob and Ray on the radio back in the day. We are here on Everything Old is New Again with author David Pollack, who is the author of a biography of Bob and Ray, Keener Than Most Persons. Welcome back, David. Thank you for being with us. Just basically for those who don't know, if you could tell us who is Bob and Ray and why would you write a book about them?
Well, Bob and Ray, Bob Elliott and Ray Goulding were two guys who, both from New England, they didn't know each other until way years later, but they both grew up in the 30s when radio was the new entertainment. And they actually met in 1946 as two ex-GIs at a Boston radio station, WHDH. Bob had a morning disc jockey show, and Ray read the newscasts every hour or half hour and would hang around, and the two started kibitzing afterwards, and it sort of caught on, and since nobody told them to stop, they kept doing it, and it became so popular that when the station got the rights to the Boston Braves and Boston Red Sox baseball games, they put Bob and Ray on for a half-hour pregame show just to build up the audience. It was called Baseball Matinee, and then when the season ended, the show was so popular they just kept it, and it became Matinee with Bob and Ray. The only thing they really knew to do was to mock popular radio shows of the day. So that was sort of the spine of the comedy. And they ended up, after about 5 years on Boston, on NBC with various network radio and TV series. At one time or another, really, they had shows and guest appearances on all the major networks. They had a Broadway show, which ran for about 6 months, and then they toured for another year, had Carnegie Hall concerts, were in a few movies, and in the 1950s, for one period, they were on the air with different shows for about 17 hours a week. Hmm. As a team, they were together longer than Laurel and Hardy, Abbott and Costello, Barnes and Allen, and Martin and Lewis.
That's terrific. And they're in the Radio Hall of Fame, of course. And what I find interesting is that they're generational in that I think that, if my research is correct, you listened to them and enjoyed them in the 50s in California. I myself certainly and David enjoyed them in the 70s while in New York. And this is something that the comedy, I think, spans the generations. I'm a huge fan, and I think you are as well. Why do you think that they appeal through all the different ages?
Well, their satires sort of existed in their own special little universe. It was broadcasting about broadcasting. It was Bob and Ray's medium and their subject matter, but the audience's familiarity with what was being lampooned was really not a prerequisite. The comedy was self-contained. You didn't need to know the history of each bit that was being spoofed. For example, Mary Backstage, Noble Wife, was based on a soap opera that ran for, I think, about 20 years. The original was called Mary Noble Backstage Wife. And that had been off since 1959. Others that they did, like Aunt Penny, was an old CBS show called Aunt Jenny. Jack Headstrong was All-American American, was based on Jack Armstrong, All-American.
I'm going to interrupt you for a second. I'm going to play one clip and let me see a little bit about
it. Blue Ace correspondent speaking from the main office of the Wide Awake Vitamin Company, and the plant superintendent is here beside me. And I think you told me, sir, that your name is Omar. Is it C or... I said your name is Omar C. or yeah. G. Hungerford, and you're the plant superintendent here at the Wide Awake Company.
That's right. My name is Omar C. Hungerford. I'm the...
Mr. Hungerford, where are you going?
I got a couch in the other office. I'm just going to have to lie down for a little while. I'm beat.
Returning it now to Bob and Ray in New York.
And I'm sorry to interrupt you there, but I wanted to, it was perfect along the lines of you introducing all the different parodies that they did. I think one of the most familiar ones may have been Wally Ballou, which was a parody of the reporter on the scene, correct?
Yeah. All about broadcasting. More specifically to your question, though, about appealing to audiences over the ages, new young audiences kept discovering Bob and Ray just through sheer generational turnover.
So it was just a matter of they were on the radio and the next generation was tuning in on the way to school or wherever it might be, and that's pretty much what happened to me.
Yeah. No knowledge of the history of the show being spoofed was... required.
Right. It was funny part. It was when I was listening to it with my friends, we would walk down to the ball field. It would take a 20-minute walk. We'd bring our transistor with us, and we would sometimes walk slower to the field because we wanted to hear the end of this particular bit or whatever it might be. And we didn't even know sometimes the references, as you were mentioning before, because we were so young. But just the subtle comedy there, you could hear Wally Ballou's trouble that he has there, or whatever the situation they may have presented. Did they write their own material? Did they have participants in helping them with that? Or what happened with
They started out in Boston. There was no writing budgets at all. So they just ad-libbed everything. They just, off the top of their heads, they just assumed they did all the voices of the characters. Ultimately, and they kept doing that through their whole career. The Mary Backstage thing I referred to, or Aunt Penny, were always ad-libbed. But when they got to New York and on the network days, on the network shows, they did have to have some writing help. So they did have through the years, various writers at different times. I go into all of that in the book. And in listening to the routines, you can usually tell what's written and what's spontaneous.
And just for the person that, let's say, in this particular generation that hasn't heard them, people such as Johnny Carson, David Letterman, the original Saturday Night Live cast, Al Franken, a writer from Saturday Night Live and performer, all of these people in one form or another enjoyed Bob and Ray so much that they would participate with them on their shows or gave them credit for their personality and their presentation.
Yeah.
Did the team affect you in any way in your writing style?
Well, I think their sense of humor certainly did. But when you're on a show, the style is pretty much dictated by the performers you're writing for. You know, you have to capture you know, whether it's Carol Burnett or Steve Allen or Alan Alda, you know, you pretty much have to capture their voices. But certainly, the Bob and Ray sensibility, is always in, you know, in the back of my mind, whether I'm at work writing something or just, you know, talking to people at a party or something.
And do you think that that they are a team that once you do give them a shot, once you do listen to them, and certainly you get a feel for through this of their style and their interest in Bob and Ray, keener than most persons, the book that you've written, David Pollack, and I would suggest that it really is something that if you've get the if you're bitten by them, you're going to enjoy them for the rest of your life, and we'll be right back.
This is a life-changing message for anyone with sleep apnea who is on the go and tired of dragging around a big, bulky home CPAP device. MiniCPAP.com now offers a portable device that's as small as a soda can and weighs less than a pound. For even more freedom, you can add a battery that's as tiny as a deck of cards. It's called the Transcend Mini CPAP, and right now you can try it risk-free for 21 days by calling 1-800-941-5963. Transcend is the world's first portable mini CPAP device. It gives you the freedom to sleep in total comfort anywhere you are. Our smallest and most advanced portable design ever, Transcend, is so small and so light you can fit it in your briefcase or purse to use anywhere you go. It's FAA compliant too, so you can even sleep comfortably while flying. Enjoy the freedom to sleep comfortably anywhere. Call MiniCPAP.com now for your 21-day in-home trial. 1-800-941-5963. That's 1-800-941-5963.
This show is sponsored by the Law Office of Douglas Viviani. Douglas Viviani has been providing quality legal services for over 26 years. We are a general practice firm and can handle any legal matter you may have for a reasonable fee. If you were involved in a car accident, starting a business, planning your estate, or need of a criminal attorney, please call 631-681-1910 or email us at vivianilaw@aol.com. Get the justice you deserve. Contact the Law Office of Douglas Viviani.
If you want to register your own .com and are looking for a responsible, sustainable, high-quality domain name registrar, then look at Parenick.com. Parenick includes a ton of value-added services like a parking page, Whois, privacy, dynamic DNS, and much more with every domain name registration at no extra cost. Not many companies can say that. So give Parenick.com a try today. Parenick.com.
Now, back to America's entertainment pop culture talk show, Everything Old is New Again, with Douglas Viviani and David Cohen.
Flaming Bombadine.
I can't be shot out of a cannon on a radio program. I said it'd be impossible. The studio isn't big enough. So what we've gone ahead and done is to take a trash can and remove the bottom, and I'll come shooting out of this trash can. I think, though, for safety's sake here, and that if you would open that door and at the far end of the studio so that in case I have too much of a charge in my shoes, I'll go through the door and then out into the hall and...
All right. Lots of luck, Flaming Bombadine.
I'm awfully sorry.
Wembley Webster just came in, ladies and gentlemen.
And I closed the door. I didn't know that the fellow was going to be shot out of the cannon.
He was right on his way.
Welcome back to Everything Old is New Again. We are here with David Pollack, the author of Bob and Ray, Keener Than Most Persons, a book that is can be found, of course, on Amazon.com, published by Applause Books, and you can look for it on applausebooks.com as well. It's a terrific read. It's a lot of fun about two comedians that I think are underrated to some, and anyone that has heard their comedy, they are unforgettable. And I would suggest that David wrote a terrific book that captures their history and also their place in radio. I would like to suggest that that David, that you did interview Bob Elliott personally for this book. Is that correct?
Yes, many times over several years.
And as a fan, I have to ask then, you know, the standard question. Of course, Ray Goulding has passed away, but to have Bob in your presence for so many years, especially being a fan of his in the 50s and thereafter, what was that like and what was he like?
Well, he is one of the most down-to-earth guys you will ever talk to. Soft-spoken, not a shred of showbiz swagger about him. If you, Douglas, or Dave were sitting in a room talking with him, you would have to reconcile in your mind that this was the same guy who did Wally Ballou or Biff Burns or, you know, any of those Word Car, any of those characters. In fact, they were both both very private guys. They were really two introverts trapped in an extrovert's business.
Right. And what was he like when you met him? When you talked to him, do you just think, oh yeah, this guy is so funny? Or does he come across as something a little different?
No, he was never trying to be funny. I mean, if something would occur, he would say it, of course. But basically, you know, it was about me asking questions, and you know, either at his he had an apartment in New York, and he has a home in Maine. And, you know, with a tape recorder and trying to get the quotes, you know, accurate. And, so it was business, you know, it was a job.
Right.
And, you know, his trying to answer the questions, he was very forthcoming, you know, very open about everything, the team's disappointments as well as all their successes.
Hmm. Now, our show, Everything Old is New Again, is and I personally, and I think Dave as well, are definitely influenced by Bob and Ray. I'd be clear to say that I've said it before. It's not that we do anything like they do, but the bottom line to me is that they brought fun to the radio, and I'm not trying to put radio down now, but there's a lot of talk radio, and some of it's well done, and so forth, but I don't see a lot of shows that are fun on the radio, and I just wonder if that topic ever came up or anything similar to that in terms of the radio today and what Mr. Elliott would think about or does think about radio.
It's always evolving due to many factors, mostly economic.
Right.
But, I mean, even for Bob and Ray themselves, you know, they managed to hold on with network shows clear through the 50s, but then they had to move on to their advertising commercial business. They made, you know, TV guest stars and had sitcom roles on various shows. Bob Newhart, on the Bob Newhart show, Bob played Bob Newhart's father on an episode. They had the Broadway shows, as I mentioned, and so forth. And then long after network radio vanished, FM came into power, and the fun days on local AM radio really began to give way to, 24-hour news and all talk formats. So, you know, it's, who knows what it'll be like. I mean, we could go way back and, you know, movies sort of replaced vaudeville, and then TV battled with movies. You know, it's always changing.
And I do think that there's, just my opinion, that there is room for a continuation of the fun on the radio that Bob and Ray brought. Certainly, if you tune into a Bob and Ray episode or that's on the internet or something you purchase from Amazon.com, it's something that is timeless. And I wonder, did they think in their day that they were doing something that was going to last, or was just something to pay the bill to the end of the week, so to speak?
Well, certainly it was a job and it was paying some bills.
Right.
But I think they were proud of what they did. They never changed, you know, as you guys pointed out, you know, the years went by and they were the same, but the audiences changed. They knew what they could do and they sort of stuck to it. But I think, I mean, FM radio is sort of flourishing now, and I think there are funny guys in the morning all around the country. You know, I'm not familiar with all the names. You two probably have a better handle on that, but it for the moment, that sort of is the legacy of 50s AM radio in New York with Bob and Ray, and there was another team who comes up in the book, Claven and Finch, who were on for years.
You know, that's another subject I wanted to ask you about, David. It's sort of a lost art, I think, is the concept of the comedy team. You know, you just don't see it too often anymore, and I'm wondering, did that come up in your conversations with Bob, or what do you feel about it?
No, it really didn't, because each of them, independent of each other, neither ever wanted to saw themselves as a comedian. They just wanted to be announcers, and that was sort of their.
Interesting.
You know, it was it just sort of happened. You know, they were thrown together and they sort of became a team, but they never really considered themselves an act in a sort of comics mindset.
I think that some of the beauty, and as a listener, is they weren't pushing it and trying to have a punchline every other word. They kind of was so relaxed in what they were doing that they allowed, and maybe it was a time frame, I don't know, they were given the opportunity, or however it worked out, they did bits that took their time to develop, and that was fine with them. They didn't have to have a laugh every two seconds.
Yeah, exactly. You hit a key point there. Bob and Ray sort of tampered with the status quo by the network radio's convention the day. The two were really game changers. They had a more, as you point out, more of an intimate style. The essence of what Bob and Ray is are just two guys in a studio entertaining themselves and each other, but the audience was in on it as kind of accomplices or co-conspirators.
Exactly. We'll be right back.
Are you ready to take your education to the next level? Arizona State University now offers over 90 top-tier degree programs, 100% online. With ASU's highly ranked online programs, you'll earn the same degree as our on-campus students, with the ability to learn wherever you want, whenever you want. Same world-renowned faculty, same leading education, same global recognition from one of the top universities in the world. Call 1-800-593-5727. That's 1-800-593-5727.
I'm Jamie from Sherman Oaks, and I just graduated with my degree from Arizona State University. I chose ASU because I received the quality education I deserve in the major I wanted, all from my home.
Jamie's not the only one to earn a degree from ASU. There are over 90 degree programs offered 100% online from one of the top universities. Now's the time to learn more about earning your degree online from Arizona State University. Call 1-800-593-5727. That's 1-800-593-5727.
For P150, P150 GA, P150 LK, P150 TN, C250A, C250E, C250Q. Not available in all states.
Have you put off seeing the dentist because you can't afford to go? Are big dental bills taking a big toll on your wallet? Would you like to have dental insurance but think it's too expensive? If you answered yes to any of these questions, call Physicians Mutual Insurance Company for a free information kit. See how you can help protect your teeth and your wallet by calling now. 1-800-783-1945. This is real dental insurance that can help cover over 300 procedures. Everything from cleanings and fillings to crowns and dentures. Your acceptance is guaranteed for one of these insurance policies, even if you're retired. You can see any dentist you choose, and you'll never pay a deductible. Call in the next 10 minutes, and we'll rush you a free information kit with all the details. 1-800-783-1945. That's 1-800-783-1945. 1-800-783-1945.
This is Everything Old is New Again, America's entertainment pop culture talk show with Douglas Viviani and David Cohen.
Next, Mary Backstage, Noble Wife, the story of America's favorite family of the footlights and their fight for security and happiness against the concrete heights of Broadway.
We are back with David Pollack, author of Bob and Ray, Keener Than Most Persons. And this is a terrific, terrific biography by and published by Applause Books. You could find it at applausebooks.com, amazon.com. It's a terrific read and so much fun to experience the inside workings of one of America's greatest radio comedy teams of all time. And we were continuing a discussion off the air. I'd like to continue, if we can, on the air a little bit about how the audience played a part in the mindset of Bob and Ray and their presentation of their, I guess you'd call them skits or bits on the radio.
Yeah, well, as I was saying, they were just, unlike those other big comedy shows, they were just two guys in a studio entertaining themselves and each other, but the audience was in on it as kind of a third member of a two-man team. The audience, they were, you know, accomplices or co-conspirators, if you will. Unlike many comedians with larger-than-life personas, the team, more or less, they distinguish themselves by sort of appearing normal with a complete absence of showbiz slickness. There was, when you think about it, there was no definable on-air character of Bob Elliott or Ray Gooding Ray Goulding. They were just content to let their multiple characters carry the comedy load because they believed in their characters and the absurd premises. Their audiences did too. They had a very infectious on-air camaraderie. The lure was the relationship and the interaction. You sort of wanted to learn their secret handshake.
Right, exactly. And you were sort of the third person, and you had some ownership as an audience member. I remember, this is going to be very obscure, but there was a spaghetti commercial back in the day in the 70s, and this kid would run around, the mother would be yelling for him, Anthony, Anthony! And they put that into skits, and I remember doing that as a catchphrase as a kid running
Anthony.
Around.
Anthony!
Yeah, right. Or, you know, there was this person that would show up every so often, they would turn and especially Mary backstage, and oh, that's the worst person in the world. This person's eating something.
Yeah.
And my brother to this day and we're umpteen years old, still once in a while or on a plane or whatever it might be, we'll say, oh, there's the worst person in the world. These things, we became part of the bit, and that's, I think sort of felt that we were part of the team, and that was the allure of it.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was doing 20 years before that in the 50s. In those years, they had a series of great sound effects guys on their Mutual and CBS shows who would just stick things in, just non sequitur things. When they got to WOR, AM radio was sort of changing, and that series was a little bit done on the cheap. They weren't even given a sound man. They couldn't even play the same themes for all their soap. Like Mary Noble, they no longer could play the Les Baxter Celestial Nocturne theme that they had always used as the opening and closing. But the spirit of it was still the same.
And let's listen to the spirit of that Mary Baxter, who's mentioned a couple times. A little short clip here.
Still haven't been able to figure that out yet.
Well, whether you want the butter on here, I'll show you. You see, this would be the near side.
Which side?
This one.
Well, why is that any different than the other side?
It's nearer to me. Then on the other side would be the far side. Now, if you butter on the far side, it would be different than buttering on the near side.
But holding it that way, you'd be buttering your fingers, wouldn't you, if you buttered on the far side?
I wouldn't be buttering my fingers, but I just butter the toast.
Let me see you butter the far side of that piece of toast.
Just like that. There's no problem.
Now, look at your hand. See, your left hand covered with butter.
Oh, it's the toast. Oh,
I don't think that's the way to do it at all.
300 slices coming up.
Right. Now butter them on the near side.
I mean, just so natural, the presentation.
Yeah.
Two silly voices, or one silly voice there. Different people going through their house of toast, and to describe that to the audience is
and because it was on every day, the listeners knew every character. And you know, it was sort of a little out of context there to know what the stakes were at the moment, but it's a great example of the spontaneous ad-libbing, which is, I guess, is a little redundant.
Right.
good ad-libbing has to be spontaneous. But of the crosstalk and of keeping, you know, four and five different characters alive in their imagination, and to know what each is thinking about every given moment. It was a real talent.
And it's my understanding from the book, Bob and Ray, keener than most persons, and we're talking with David Pollack, that when they performed all of the things that they did, but let's just talk about Mary Backstage, as you say, of course they had four main characters and then other characters thereafter that were introduced into the mix, that they would do that, I think it's about a 3 or 4 or 5 minute skit, but they would do that without stopping, right? They would just take
the
thing through?
They were on live. If you were, it depends upon what series you're talking about. But, when they were on, they didn't do Mary Backstage on CBS or Mutual, but they did had another soap opera, right. The Life and Loves of Linda Lovely in those days. And it was exactly the same. It was the same voices,
right.
the same characters, but different names. Totally spontaneous.
Yeah, and you could hear them once in a while laugh, but for the most part, they were, straightforward, deadpan about it, and that was funny
always
about it.
Deadpan,
so you'd turn to your friend, you'd say, wait a minute, are we supposed to laugh at that? That is hysterical, you know.
Yeah.
And I wonder, do you feel that?
Excuse me for interrupting, but that was the point I was sort of making earlier. It was up to the listener to determine. You had to pay attention.
Right.
It was up to the listener to determine what was funny. There was no studio audience sending you that signal.
Right. And again, as we say, that then made the audience members part of this, and it's infectious. You just become part of all of these skits and unrealistically become an owner of their comedy. And that's why it's so personal. You love it. Their comedy was so clean, too. Of course, it had to be clean on the radio, but that's another point that, you know, anyone can listen to any of their skits. And of course, they were on Broadway and Carnegie Hall. They crossed all the generations, and when they were on Broadway in Carnegie Hall, and I guess it was the late 70s, was it?
The play opened in September of 1970 and ran into 71.
Okay. Were they the toast of the town? Where did they stand on the Broadway stage with regard to the general
public? Well, it ran about 6 months. It was a hard ticket to get. And it got unbelievable reviews, particularly from the New York Times, which, you know, is the big one.
Right.
And then they took it on the road. But it was a produced evening in the theater. It wasn't just, doing radio bits. They were moving about, changing costumes, and it was quite an impressive show.
Yeah, something I just lost in the time there. That's something that you can get that on. You can get tapes of that or recordings of that, audio recordings. I would love to have seen that. That's just me as an aside.
Yeah, I don't know that there was a TV HBO abbreviated or edited version which they redid for TV. But I don't know that unless you know something I don't, I don't know that there's actual video of the Broadway show.
No, there isn't, and that's why I say it's what a shame. It's just a terrific fun to be spending our day with the author of Bob and Ray, Keener Than Most Persons, David Pollack. This is a book that is a must-read behind the scenes, and I bet you once you read this book, you're going to take a look and enjoy listening to. Some more time with David Pollack on Everything Old. Do again. Thank you very much for being with us. We'll be back.
Thank you. That was a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
I'm Steve Sitkowski, a former Wall Street insider. I'm holding a book that will show you investing strategies which could help you earn the kind of money you've always dreamed about. And right now I'm giving this book away for free. So who needs to read it? If you're in the middle of your career and worry you'll never have enough money to retire, you need to read this book. If you're already retired and your income isn't enough, you need to read this book. And if you don't want to be selling burgers at 80, you need to read this free book. It includes the strategy I use to make a 72% profit on a trade where the stock only moved 12%. You'll need at least $1 million to ever fully retire. If you're behind on that goal, you really need to read Trade Like the Pros. And you can for free by calling 1-800-947-1516. Skeptical that it will deliver results? It's a free book, so what do you have to lose? Find out how at 1-800-947-1516. 1-800-947-1516.
Are you suffering with hearing loss? Are you sick of people constantly complaining that your TV is too loud? Are you tired of asking people to speak up? Would you like to hear more clearly, but you don't want to wear a hearing aid that makes you look old? Then you need to try Listen Clear, a life-changing breakthrough precisely designed by top audio engineers to fit your ear almost invisibly. And you can adjust Listen Clear to find the perfect way to hear everything, wherever you are, and whatever you're doing. And now we're extending our in-home trial to let you try Listen Clear risk-free for a full 45 days. With free shipping, we'll even give you free batteries for life. Call now, 1-800-957-9652. Listen Clear is lightweight and completely hassle-free, and it's practically invisible. Call for your extended 45-day in-home trial with free shipping and free batteries for life. For free information, call now. 1-800-957-9652. That's 1-800-957-9652. 1-800-957-9652.